I'm John Kroll. The Memorial Day weekend is a time when people all around the globe focus on Indianapolis. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about how Indianapolis handles all the attention the 500 and other events bring the Circle City's way. My guests are Chris Gall, Senior Vice President of Visit Indy, and Bob Schultz, Vice President of Downtown Indy. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Our email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about what may be the biggest weekend in Indianapolis every year. That is the Memorial Day holiday weekend, which features the Indianapolis 500 and all sorts of other activities and events. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are two veterans of the program. Chris Gall, he is Senior Vice President of Visit Indy, and Bob Schultz, he's Vice President of Downtown Indy. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for having us on.
Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Yeah, you guys don't get to spend much time together, right? So we probably ought to talk a little bit to set, because most people who are around here, you know, the 500 and Memorial Day weekend are sort of like fixtures. You know, we think of that in the way that someone who lives in Denver or in western Colorado would think, oh, yeah, the mountains are here and they're really not that spectacular. They're just part of the landscape. But this is a big deal. How many people do we expect to have involved in activities, including the race, over this weekend here in Indianapolis? I'll start with you, Chris.
Yeah, thanks. It's fair to say that more than 300,000 people will descend on Indianapolis this weekend. That takes into consideration the race itself, which, by the way, I think the momentum that was established or reestablished for last year's 100th has continued, because hotel numbers are up, ticket sales out at the Motor Speedway are up. All the barometers that we measure to see is the health of the Indy 500 close to last year's show. It's going to be very competitive to last year. And so, again, 300,000 people plus in Indianapolis, around the track, in our downtown. You can't take that for granted. And certainly in our DNA as Hoosiers is the race. Mm-hmm. And I think we were proud from a city perspective that locals invited friends and family to the race last year. The traditions were picked back up to the next generation. And that's carrying through to this year.
So, Bob, let's quantify this also in economic terms. I mean, how important is this weekend to Central Indiana's economy?
Well, you often think you don't build a church for Easter Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. And so you think about a city that is capable of hosting this large of a crowd. As Chris said, 300,000 people. What we're seeing is a downtown that is ready for that. We flex our muscles best when the biggest crowds come, millions and millions of dollars. You think about back even the Super Bowl, how excited we all got about that. That was about 100,000 people coming to the Super Bowl. Chris just referenced 300,000. So you magnify the dollars spent, not only the visitor dollars, but then also the dollars changing hands for everything from family cookouts to porch parties to celebrations. And it's a strong economic weekend. You stack those up year after year after year, never having to bid on that business for our city. Our restaurants are full. Our hotels are full. Our grocery stores are full. All of those things are happening, and it means great for our economy.
Yeah, it's always struck me, I think someone observed years ago when I was at the newspaper, to put this in perspective, just how big an event the 500 is, says, for those few hours out there that everybody is gathered and they're watching that race, the Speedway, which is, admittedly, a big racetrack, but a relatively small contained space, becomes the second largest city in the state of Indiana and would be among the larger cities in the Midwest at that point. So, in terms of marketing this to the rest of the world, and by the way, I shouldn't let our listeners think that we haven't seen it. I know you guys have been all over it. We are well aware that the New York Times did a major piece on Indianapolis today. How do you go about selling the city, selling this weekend to people, first, let's say, in other parts of the country, and then we could say to other parts of the world? I'll start with you first on that one, Bob.
Well, certainly it's our DNA, and so this isn't something that we had to bid for and bring here. We all grew up with this. Most of us who are listening to this program have had the Indy 500 a part of our culture, not only our experience but our culture. So you ask people from around the country, well, where are you from? Well, I'm from Denver. I'm from San Francisco. I'm from Indianapolis. Oh, the Indy 500. Mm-hmm. It is our moniker. It's our brand. It demonstrates competitiveness and constancy. And so you think about something that has continued well now over a century that has been sustained and continues to draw people and attract people. And that's what we're also excited about is the thousands and thousands who will come, be introduced, exposed to Indianapolis, the businesses that are here, the culture that is here, and obviously our goal is to help have some of them want to move here and work here.
Chris?
Yeah, we use the Indy 500 year-round from a Visit Indy perspective, from a tourism and marketing perspective, to catch the eyes and ears of visitors across the world. For many years, it was our only calling card. Now we've evolved, but it's still the easiest way to catch the ears and the eyes of the New York Times to say, hey, come check out the city ahead of the world's largest single-day sporting event, but figure out what else there is to do and see. And so that's perfect today, posting in New York Times. There are 36 hours to explore Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. We hadn't seen that kind of news coverage in the New York Times since 2006, so we were very happy to see that. But again, from a tourism perspective, to be able to say to a meeting planner, to an event planner, if we can host the world's largest single-day sporting event, chances are we can host your next meeting or convention. That's a message that resonates year-round. It is also the weekend in which we bring in the biggest and best prospective convention customers. We put them in our suite. They navigate the city. They see the lights and entertainment, and they leave very assured that their convention would not only do well here but flourish based on infrastructure, transportation, and just the overall vibrancy of Indianapolis.
So the message is one of continuity and the fact that you can do large-scale events. When you're trying to pull in just, ordinary folks who might want to think of Indianapolis as a vacation spot, and we're don't have the immediate appeal of saying, oh, we'll go to a beach somewhere or we'll do this or that. Is it possible that to use the 500 to sell that to individuals rather than simply corporations or large enterprises?
Absolutely. We spend about $1 million in paid media in markets 400 miles or less of Indianapolis leading up to the race, really launching April 1st with the regular drumbeat of race into Indianapolis for Memorial Day weekend with your friends, with your family, with girls get away, guys get away, make a golf outing out of it. And so we use the race and this weekend to attract regional visitors. And we've done really it's been strong growth in this. Our hotels sold out about 2 weeks sooner than they did from the 2015 race, certainly last year with 100th record-setting numbers across the board. But we're healthier in terms of tourism this year than we were for the 15th and getting really close to 2016 with the 100th running. So it's, again, it's a year-round effort in marketing Indianapolis through the lens of a race, but also this regional campaign to get people here, family and friends in cities across the Midwest.
Who do we see as our competition with those efforts? Is there anyone that comes to mind?
Well, certainly Churchill Downs and the Kentucky Derby is an attractant. It's a similar type event behaviorally, psychographically. People are from Chicago might go to Churchill Downs and see the Kentucky Derby a few weeks ago, but then not come to Indianapolis. So, yeah. There's a competitive infrastructure with water parks and other major events that happen in the Midwest in the summer.
But what I would add on that is that You know, we have talked, you have reported on this incredible tech sector boom here in central Indiana and specifically downtown. We're thrilled by that. And we have to give hats off to the leadership out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway that they see, yes, they're hosting this race and they'll never lose sight of that as core to their mission. But they're also filling it up with energy that is attractive to the millennial set who may not have grown up with racing, who may not yet be followers of racing. But they're moving into our community. They're nearby. And they want to create a party atmosphere that is second to none. And so you think about the major music festivals across the country in the Midwest. And the month of the Memorial Day weekend and the Keith Urbans and the Energizers that come out with the electronic dance music, all of that is in the Snake Pit. All of this is attractive to people who live here, who are moving here, who say, man, there's so much to do. And it's not just about a race. It's also about our culture.
Have you, because you mentioned that a couple of times, have we ever tracked how many people, is there even a way to track this? How many people do end up relocating here because of an experience they had with the 500 or something like that?
Well, I think what we don't, I mean, I can't cite specific data on that, but you see that anecdotally of people who are attracted to Indianapolis, who are introduced to Indianapolis for the first time because of a major event, whether it be a race or whether it be a convention. The Big Ten, the whole strategy of sports, bringing that into our community attracts people from around the Midwest. They come here for a basketball game or a race or some sort of convention. They kick the tires, they discover it, and then they want to respond to that. And so what we do see is that growing sector. Certainly, people now in the statistics say that, especially the millennial set, will choose a place to live before a place to work. Mm-hmm. And so this energized downtown, the number of restaurants, the independent restaurants, the food scene, the culture, the museums, the things that fill out that experience beyond a race weekend is what they're looking for, and they're seeing it live and well when they do come here for this event.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the biggest weekend in Indianapolis, the Memorial Day weekend and the running of the 500. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So, Chris, you know, the cliche always is that, say, for example, in the jewelry business, they do 80% of their business mm-hmm. between Thanksgiving and the end of the year. You know, it's holiday. It's really driven by that. We've talked about the fact that the hotels, the restaurants here, are packed. I mean, for a lot of these places, is this weekend and the run-up to it sort of the make or break point for them, that without it they wouldn't remain in business?
We've enjoyed for many years now a virtually sold out downtown during Memorial Day weekend. When you look at the summer months, April, May, June, July, August, September, that's been our sweet spot with attracting these regional visitors to Indianapolis. I can tell you that 60%+ of them come from Chicago. That's a key market for us. And the hotels in particular have seen an increase through the April Memorial Day to Labor Day in terms of hotel occupancy and thus revenue. I think it's you mentioned earlier about someone attending the race and then moving here. While we don't have that statistic, we do know that nearly 70% of everyone who visits Indy comes back for a return visit. That's strong. And if you can open their eyes during an event like the Indy 500 and have a positive experience, chances are they're going to race back and not do that same race again, but something else different in Indianapolis.
I know your focus is primarily on the downtown and on Indianapolis proper, but an event this big, I would assume, also has kind of a spillover effect. How far out do the hotels and restaurants fill up? Have you done studies?
We're booking hotels in Lafayette and Bloomington, Columbus. Certainly it goes, while the downtown is our magnet and our attractant and commands the highest rate, the suburban hotels and even the central Indiana hotels are filling up and commanding higher rates. So it's a compression effect that happens because of the uniqueness of the downtown and the festival-like atmosphere. Of course, that's where the sponsors and the teams and the drivers are staying and playing. But it's good. It's definitely driving demand across central Indiana.
How much do the hotel rates climb? for this weekend, this event?
It's a great question. It's a three-night minimum, which we're always able. So it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You must check in. And, you know, the JW Marriott, where it might be at 260 on a normal weekend, is 430, 460. So it's a healthy increase and one that consumers continue to pay.
We are talking about the biggest weekend in Indianapolis, 500 weekend, Memorial Day, when 300,000 people come to the city. My guests are Chris Gall. He is the Senior Vice President of Visit Indy. Bob Schultz, Vice President of Downtown Indy. If you want to join the conversation, talk about some of the exciting events or share your memories of 500s and Memorial Day weekends past, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the biggest weekend in Indianapolis every year, the Memorial Day weekend and the running of the Indianapolis 500. My guests are Chris Gall, he's Senior Vice President of Visit Indy, and Bob Schultz, who is Vice President of Downtown Indy. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Robert has done and reach out to us via Facebook. Robert writes, going by the pre-race Sunday, foot traffic on Mass Avenue in the rain, this should be the biggest race ever. I mean, is that the anticipation here? Last year we heard numbers of what, 325, 330, something like that? I know it gets hard to get an accurate count.
Yeah, I believe the Speedway announced that they were a purchased ticket or a reserved seat ticket sellout. And so that was the first time that that had ever happened in our modern history. And so they're not quite there yet, but they have sold more tickets for this race than any of the last 15. Excluding last year. So that trend has returned to the density of those coming out to the Speedway. And not only that, they're coming for more events throughout the month of May. So it's not just a single day experience. Carb Day has come back to a renewed energy, and the Grand Prix that's out there 2 weekends ago, that generates another round of buying and spending. And so And then the concert series that they have out there is remarkable.
Chris?
I think where we're winning is carrying that momentum from the 100th, but family and friends here in Indianapolis, in central Indiana, are inviting their family and friends again to come stay with them and watch the race. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're edging away. You know, I know we have friends, the Berg family, who live in Heron Morton Place, and they host friends and relatives. They host porch parties. And really the camaraderie that we used to see decades ago is coming back. And I think that momentum with family and friends in central Indiana saying, visit us from Chicago or Louisville or New York. Come see the race in person and help us with our traditions that we're carrying on. That's a big thing for tourism, is visiting friends and family. When our residents become our tour guides and invite people to come see the city through the lens. So I think the listener in Mass Ave, seeing additional foot traffic on Mass Ave, is probably residents inviting their family and friends and getting excited.
And that residential piece of downtown's growth, I got to tell you, is remarkable. And so the attractiveness of living downtown, not just visiting downtown. So our organization, Downtown Indy, focuses not only on that visitor energy of downtown, but those who live here every day throughout 360 days a year. And so that focus is the flags are in their yards, the checkered flag energy is there. It's 20 years ago, we had about 15,000 people living in the regional center. We're up to 35,000. So think about that and magnify that day after day after day. Those people are the ones coming down to the bars. Their friends are coming to town, like Chris mentioned, and that density is just remarkable.
Has it, those of us who did, grow up in this area, remember when the 500 was a somewhat different kind of experience where it wasn't a weekend. It was the entire month of May that it started every weekend, had some activity. Then there was a compression of the events for, you know, political reasons within the racing world that we really don't have to go into, because I know the partisans on both sides can chew up hours arguing about that. Has the economic impact, as it became more concentrated, become greater or lesser as a result of that? Chris, I'll start with you.
Greater, and that's because the Grand Prix, the IndyCar race that uses the road track, if you will, has brought in more sponsor dollars, more corporate entertaining, just because the qualifications and practice in the month of May has been limited a little bit in terms of the 500. That doesn't mean that more different people and different teams are coming in and out of Indianapolis. So it is good and greater. I would tell you that a lot of that decision was also based on the race teams wanting to consolidate the time and energy. It's expensive. It's about $1 million for each race team to run that one day in Indianapolis for the 500. So you think about the expense of the teams. That was also driven by them.
So, and I understand that. I guess the point is then we've had to some degree, this buildup that we've talked about and recovering the momentum suggests that at some point the momentum was lost a little bit. Have we sort of, has this process been one primarily of adapting those old traditions to this new reality? What was it that forced us to have to recover the momentum, Bob?
Well, I think you certainly cited it. You know, so there was a change in the product, and the those who experienced it were diverted to other attractions, and the energy behind one event perhaps might have subsided somewhat. And those of us who grew up here say, but those are temporary, and those are factious. And so, what do we need to do to reclaim that cultural energy of the Indy 500? And I think last year's race was an indication that that it's still there and still alive and well. What we cannot not mention is the fact that in those days that you referenced, that sleeping giant was a sleeping giant from June until April. And now it is a daily attraction out there at the Motor Speedway, multiple events, and not just racing events, but multiple events, a concert venue. It has spurred an economy of motorsports technology that IUPUI has a program now, and the number of teams that practice here and energize here and grow here. Formula One represented here in conversations, and the yesterday's or this week's announcement about the Brickyard 400 shifting to a fall date. All of these are signs that the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is the number one contender for business and business attraction in the country around motorsports, and I think everyone is taking note.
So let's shift gears here a little bit. And as we do that, I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So suppose there are people out there who don't have a subscription to the New York Times and no one has sent it. Let's talk about some of the things that you can do in Indy. I don't think we have to confine ourselves to the 36 hours that the Times does. We could say 48, starting from, you know, now through the end of Memorial Day. What are some of the activities that we could do? Bob?
Well, I'll certainly hit what I believe is probably the most important part of this conversation, and that is you just said the word Memorial Day. It is a weekend that the nation takes pause and remembers those who have fallen in the line of service for our country. This should not be forgotten throughout the weekend. Kudos to the 500 Festival, who kicks off their weekend with the Memorial Day service, which is one of the most raise the hair on the back of your neck kind of celebration and of those who have fallen in the line of service. And that is downtown. That's at noon on Friday to kick off the celebration weekend. But what's also important is that we have 20 monuments and memorials throughout our downtown that are dedicated to remembering the war and those who have fought for us, second only to Washington, D.C. And so you you can visit those memorials and monuments, hear the stories, go from the American Legion Mall and the USS Indianapolis Memorial there on the canal, the Soldiers and Sailors Monument, which incidentally, both the Indiana War Memorial, which is spectacular, and the Soldiers and Sailors Monument, they're both open on Memorial Day, where most Mondays they are closed, but Memorial Day and Veterans Day, they open that up, and I think it's a great place to bring the family and kind of take in what we're remembering this particular weekend.
What other events are there, Chris, that we could hit?
Well, I would just say, I think, you know, if the New York Times is reporting that Indianapolis is a place you need to go visit, that there's a sense of urgency for locals to not only invite family and friends for the race, but also to take pride and ownership of this city and that you can have a staycation. Mm-hmm. I think often we don't fully use the cultural trail and mm-hmm. the novelty, if you will, of parking your car and with your family or friends, getting on a bike, renting a bike through a Pacers bike share and taking and just exploring. Don't have an agenda. Just say, I'm gonna rent a bike and we're going to start biking. We can go from Mass Ave down to Fountain Square. I haven't been there in a while. You can get all the way up into Broad Ripple. Explore on the cultural trail is probably my favorite way to take a visitor when they're in Indianapolis. And I think our residents often forget that it's also a great way to explore the city.
And it leads you right over to the Indianapolis Zoo. And I got to tell you, that zoo always finds ways to reinvent itself and to bring new exhibits and attractions. And the magnificent macaws gets opened up this weekend. And these are birds from 50 different birds. You can picture them, you know, on the front of your Fruit Loops box. So, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of bird, they're not only going to soar overhead of the exhibit there in the zoo, they will eventually be soaring across the sky in downtown and will continue to come back and roost every night at the zoo. So they're going to be bird sightings. I was talking to my friends at the Indianapolis Indians. They're aware of what happens if one of those birds lands in the outfield and during an Indians game. So this is just going to add an interesting element and the compliments to our friends at the Indianapolis Zoo. And we all can come out there and see this exhibit. There obviously will be plenty of them on site there as they also open the Bicentennial Pavilion, continually reinventing themselves for our visitors and our residents.
So we can't leave that hanging. What are the plans to deal with? The Indians have to deal with one of those birds if it lands on the field in the middle of a game.
It's a game time decision, honestly. So I think they have been trained. These birds have been trained to return to their zoo where they roost. I guess we're all going to be able to discover what happens as this experience takes place in our downtown, but specifically at the zoo. And they're going to monitor that. Obviously, they're the professionals and the wildlife conservation experts. And so maybe it's a topic for a future show there, John.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Sally. Again, if you want to join the conversation via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Sally writes, wanting to reiterate your comments about millennials' relationship to the race. I'm a 22-year-old, but there are three girls at my workplace who are 18 years of age. The nature of their excitement for the race is classically millennial. They keep talking about going to the snake pit this weekend. It's like they are unaware or uninterested in the fact that there even is a race. To them, it's all about the experience, and the main event is the music. It wouldn't surprise me if they didn't know any of the names of the drivers and would never consider buying a seat. They want to be in the midst of the experience in the infield. To me, this appears characteristically millennial and an interesting aspect of this event. If we tracked, Sally, I'm going to take the liberty of sort of reframing what you're saying as a question. Have we tracked the different reasons that people come to the race? I mean, it sounds like these girls come because they want a big sensory experience. I was going to use party, but that sounds stereotypical. But they want something where they feel like they're part of a large communal experience.
3 years ago, the Motor Speedway did extensive research, and they found that they missed a generation. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the traditions weren't passed along. That has manifested itself into what we call now the millennials. So the millennials weren't being marketed to. The traditions weren't there. Mm-hmm. Their tactic of offering dance music, if you will, in the snake pit to resuscitate that age group, I think, was brilliant because it did engage them. It got them inside. It got whet their appetite. Eventually, they will graduate from the snake pit and be more aware of the famed cars racing around and buy tickets and come back as adults, if you will, with jobs and then kids and then their grandkids. And that's how you evolve the process in terms of ticketing. So, yes, they have by segment the renewal, the tickets who get renewed, the visitors, the international visitors, the corporate community who's buying tickets, out of state, in state. They have all that. And the millennial piece was missing. And so this is in direct response to that, and I think a brilliant tactic. For Sally to be aware of that, I think, is refreshing, and for her to be able to turn her attention and educate her friends on there's more than dance music will certainly benefit the race moving forward.
So when you say they missed a generation, which generation did they miss?
You could say Generation X did not get cultivated, did not get moved along. Again, I'm generalizing, but that's what the research showed. And so how do you catch back up with them so that Generation X is inviting their kids and then the millennials stepping into that footprint? How do you get them familiar with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway? To Bob's point, a year-round attraction with other concerts from the Rolling Stones to other ways to get involved in the track, that is another way to get the millennials activated. The lights at the Brickyard. During Christmas and the holidays, you can go around in your car and see holiday lights. It's becoming more accustomed to how to get to the Motor Speedway and that they're welcoming and open other than race day.
Do we know why that, to use the term Generation X, why they were lost, as it were, what the precipitating factors were?
That's a great question. Off the top of my head, I don't recall the one or two reasons, but it was just when you look at ticket sales by the demographics, that was just a missing void that was, again, carrying on over into the millennials. And so part of it was the sport itself, when CART and the split and some of the momentum, if you will, was lost in the speed ahead. That has been repaired. I think when they put in the family-friendly viewing mounds, when they start doing no smoking sections of the race, when they have the ability to have kids' day and have it more well-rounded, it gets those family pieces back in order.
So in terms of this event, marketing it across the board, it sounds like the millennials have one reason. Do you have to shift the kind of marketing of the city based on which demographic group you're trying to reach? Bob, I'll start with you on that.
Well, you know, we certainly think that we have a broad range of cultural experiences, not only motorsports here in central Indiana, but certainly a variety of arts, entertainment activities, the number of performing venues that exist in our city. The Speedway wants to recognize that is a place where that can happen as well. Without revealing too much about my age, I'm part of that generation that when I was 19, I don't know if I was able to go out to the Speedway and tell you who was running that day. I grew up with the Unser and Andretti names around me in the Foyts, but now you go to this concert and whether you're 19, 25, or 35 millennial, you know, we see Connor Daly coming over, we see James Hinchcliffe coming over, and these become the names of the millennial generation that are bonding with them to say, hey, come back over and see us race next week as well and start building up a little bit more of an energizer.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Chad, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Chad writes, with the recent events overseas and with the Indy 500 being the largest single spectator sport in the world, will the crowds notice an increase in security?
The answer is yes and no. On top of that, Vice President Mike Pence will be attending. That was revealed here this week. A lot of what the Indianapolis Motor Speedway did for the 100th will carry through to the 101st. By design, some of it will be seen in public's eye, like last year with some more canines, with license plates being scanned to know if the driver has an offense or arrest record. Others won't be seen to the human eye. It's a SEER 2 security event, one of only 11 in the United States that will happen this year. And what that means is federal dollars can be used in participating in the security. So yes and no, in a good way, will be safer this year.
And also some of the, you know, we talk about the leadership at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway are advancing the safety of motorsports with the Safer Barrier and other things. You hear about this. The security of a outdoor venue is also something that they have been a motorsports leader, a global leader in. And so outdoor venues from across the country and across the world study what the Indianapolis Motor Speedway has done for years. So this isn't just about, you know, recent experiences. And at the end of the day, it's all, if you see something, say something.
We're talking about the biggest weekend in Indianapolis, the 500 weekend. My guests are Chris Gall and Bob Schultz. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the biggest weekend in Indianapolis every year, the Memorial Day holiday weekend, which, of course, is when the Indianapolis 500 is run. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Chris Gall, Senior Vice President of Visit Indy, and Bob Schultz, Vice President of Downtown Indy. Got a question just before we went to the break about security, you know, the event in Manchester, and it is unfortunately a sad reality in this world now that huge events like this are, you know, potential terror magnets or targets. How has that shifted? I mean, we've now been living in this world for more than 15 years. How has that shifted the way that the 500 had to do business, for that matter, the city had to do business? Because it is just a new reality. Bob, I'll start with you.
Well, for years, we've talked about the incredible partnership that the public safety professionals have with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. They're committed to that. They have set the game plan for many outdoor experiences across the country because of that type of partnership and leadership, and that continues. And so all public safety professionals, from IMPD to the state police to the FBI, are all part of that conversation. I think we as consumers have gotten used to standing in lines for security now as we enter into whether we're going to the airport or we're going to a Colts game, or now obviously the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, you're used to or going into Disney World. I mean, I'll add that to it as well. So you think about those lines that you're prepared to stand in, have your bag searched, that you're subject to a personal search as well. All of this is the new reality. You plan ahead. You also try to reconfigure. I know the elimination of traffic on Georgetown Street is part of that plan as well, and the things that we will never see, as Chris mentioned.
Chris, does it change the way that the message you have to deliver to get people to come to the city? I mean, it's odd because I know that there are some cities where that question, I won't name them because I don't want people who come from those places to get upset with me. But there are certain cities where you will hear people say, well, is it safe? Can I go? Which normally is not a question that gets asked about Indianapolis, but in this context, particularly after a major terrorist attack, could be.
Yeah, I think the inconvenience of waiting a little bit longer to get into something like the Indy 500 ultimately makes that visitor, that consumer, feel that much more comfortable. It's still a detractant for anytime you market the world's largest single-day sporting event. It has that potential connotation of, wow, that seems like a lot of red tape and traffic, or that's really fun and well executed. To answer your question, Indianapolis, clean, safe, and walkable. Those are the three words repeatedly we hear from visitors who come here: clean, safe, and walkable. And so we take pride in the fact that you do feel safe in Indianapolis, and that does come across in the Indy 500 when you go. You know, Allison Melancton, who ran our Super Bowl in 2012, was cherry-picked over at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and has helped for the 100th and now the 101st take a lot of those pages of the playbook on how you execute a safe, well-oiled, well-executed a major event and put them in place at the Motor Speedway in time for the 100th and now in the 101st. And so little hospitality touches to make that visitor feel more safe are in place and were seen and felt and heard last year in some of the post-race surveys that we saw.
We've gotten a question via Facebook from a listener named Julian. And again, if you want to find us on Facebook, you can track us down at No Limits WFYI. Julian writes, any data on how Airbnb is affecting hotel sales? Chris.
We know last year Airbnb, more than $1 million over race weekend was generated by Airbnb. In the shared economies that we're now up against, the consumer is seeking out Airbnb. And for Indianapolis, there are about 10 special event weekends in which our Airbnbs get tapped, and it serves as an overflow function for our hotel so we can capture more of that economic impact and not turn away people. So it was a very healthy, arguably Super Bowl-esque Airbnb income and revenue generated last year, and it's pacing that way this year as consumers are seeking out these shared economies like Airbnb. So it's a good thing to have that here in Indianapolis and offer to our visitors.
We've made the comparison between this and the Super Bowl. Now, admittedly, this happens every year and all of that. And the Super Bowl, we're likely lucky to get once every decade, if that. But in terms of the scope and size of the event, since we've had both here, how do they compare?
Well, certainly the Super Bowl is all taking place downtown, so we'll make a comparison there that the energy of downtown is more evident with a major sporting event like the Super Bowl or, let's hope, you know, the NBA or the NFL draft or perhaps even the NBA All-Star game. These are all concentrated in our sports venues downtown and the hotels. You can walk to them and all of that. Because the Motor Speedway is so massive, and then we think about that, you know, we think about crowds going to a Colts game. That's 80,000 people at the most. Mm-hmm. A Super Bowl, 100,000 people. The race, 300,000 people. And so it's a much more dispersed visitor experience from hotels, as Chris has mentioned, throughout the community. What is common in all of this is that there is a fan experience that is free. You don't have to be a ticket holder to be able to get caught up into the energy. In the Super Bowl, we saw that on Georgia Street with the Super Bowl Village. For the Indianapolis 500, we see that with the parade downtown, another 250,000 people descending around that parade route for this incredible experience that is second to none in most Midwest cities. Certainly, there's like two maybe bigger parades, I think Macy's and the Rose Bowl parade. And so this parade is spectacular, and we're benefiting from that. Similar strategy with the Super Bowl. How can we get that fan experience beyond the ticketed audience who would be attending the event?
Chris, you were saying during one of the breaks that, you know, if this were an event that we had to bid on, and first you listed all of the things that make it attractive. I'm going to ask you to do that on the air, too. What would the bids look like? I mean, what would cities be bidding to host something like this?
Millions of dollars. I'm talking 50 to 75, maybe $100 million. Here's why, John. If you could say to Denver, Chicago, Miami, Orlando, hey, if you could magically pick up the famed Oval and put it in your destination, would you want to have 300,000 people on a weekend, national TV, 2,000 international media, celebrities, and this economic boost? The answer would be yes. And it would be a competitive bid process to try to get an event like the Indy 500 with the parade, with the snake pit ball, with the pageantry, and again, the national TV coverage, period. And so it would be extremely competitive, and cities would be very competitive in vying to entice the Indy 500 there. So I think the sense of urgency that the city felt and the community felt and rallied behind the 100th, which the Indy 500 is twice as old as the Super Bowl. We felt that the urgency was there, and that has carried forward. So luckily, the famed Oval can't get picked up and moved. Otherwise, we would be up against stiff competition.
Is there any comparable experience around the world to the 500? I mean, we keep talking about it being the single. I mean, what's the second largest single sporting event or cultural event or anything like that?
Well, you certainly look at the Olympics, right? So that's, you know, every 4 years.
But that's spread out.
So that's spread out, right. So you think of other motorsports venues, Daytona and Talladega and others, whether in the NASCAR world or in the IndyCar racing world, Formula One, those are common experiences that a lot of people come to a concentrated area and experience something together. And so we have that largest one. We have one of the most historic ones, probably one of the first ones, and now it's continued on. I was just telling my daughter Valerie that we see this and up at Purdue with the Grand Prix, right? So they do this Grand Prix, a little five down in Indiana. All of that is thematic around the motorsports industry and racing. So I think it transcends us as a state. It defines us as a state, and it's something we celebrate as a state.
So when you are sort of getting ready to sell this weekend to persuade people to use the 500 either as an introduction or, to bring them in to close the deal in the city, as it were, when does the planning for that start? Like if we're talking about this year, I'm presuming it's now all the plans have been laid in motion. It's just about executing and hoping everything works at this point. But when does the planning start for next year, or has it started already?
Well, in terms of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, it's year-round. In terms of Visit Indy, we start looking in January ahead of May, and we start picking places and spaces that we want our VIPs to go check out. For instance, there's a new hot restaurant, Stella, on Mass Ave, where you can saunter in and try world-class cuisine, and then you can go taste beer at Sun King, and you can go and do these new hot things that are unexpected. When you look at Indianapolis through the eyes of one of our convention prospects who are thinking between Miami and Denver and Chicago. And so we plan almost year-round, but specifically in January, to say, hey, come to Indianapolis. You're one of the few that we will entertain and get to see the world's largest single-day sporting event. That takes logistics and hotel partners. And we know the exact routes we want to drive our prospective VIPs so they see the best of the best of the best of Indianapolis. So it's laborious but very fun. There is no better time to be in this state and this city than the month of May.
So let me say this. Let's do a little bit of role-playing. Let's say I am the CEO for a major corporation that is thinking about relocating some part of its operations here. You've invited me to the city, Bob, to check out downtown Indy to see the race and all of that. What are you going to show me while I'm here?
Well, Chris hit some of them, and so we have our local food scene. You know, we can look back even 10 years ago, one out of every four restaurants that opened in downtown was homegrown or a locally independent-owned restaurant. Now, 75% of those that are opening are homegrown, locally independent restaurants like Chris referenced, Milktooth and Stella and others. Mm-hmm. We start to see this food scene. We want them to see that because, you know, obviously we experience a city through its culture and through our palate. And that's how we also want them to remember. Sure, they're going to be, they might say yes because it's like, oh, I've always wanted. It's a bucket list experience going to the Indy 500. But what we fill the city experience with is the restaurants, the food scene, the connectivity of our downtown, the walkability, as Chris said, the clean, the beautification of it. All of these contribute to something that I could picture myself here. So it's not just about popping into the community and then popping out. It's starting to say, could I picture myself and my family, my coworkers, my employees wanting to be a part of this community? Absolutely. And, oh, by the way, it's one of the most affordable places in the country to own a business. And that's usually what then tips them over the top, right?
Gotten a follow-up question via Facebook from the listener named Julian. He was the one who asked the Airbnb question. Says, I was expecting local business hostility, much less acceptance, as an overflow mechanism. I wonder if this could work for the airlines. I'm going to transform that a little bit and just ask, because Airbnb, Uber, all sorts of things now are innovations, technologies made possible that didn't exist, just a few years ago. How has that transformed the experience and the planning? Because it is now a much less institutionalized world that we live in and much more entrepreneurial.
Consumers are seeking out Uber. They're seeking out Airbnb. That's not to say there's not a place for our taxis and our hoteliers, because there is. So if we don't adapt to that new technology, to those shared economies, Indianapolis will lose out. It's also helping our hotels, rising tide, more innovations, crisper customer service. So I think that competitive nature that these shared economies and these new technologies have put in place is helping overall the tourism footprint in Indianapolis. Specifically to airlines, I think you're going to see that as well, is now with cell phones readily available and everything being recorded, whether that's at the Indy 500 or your hotel lobby check-in experience or coming to Indianapolis via plane, you could be recorded, and what you and how you act can and will be used against you socially to affect your brand. So everyone's on high alert, and luckily the city's 75,000 tourism hospitality employees go through tourism training quarterly to get ready for each big event, for each big quarter, so they know that this is an international event. You need to be extra hospitable with countries coming into Indianapolis, from customs to language to greetings. So we do it really well here. And luckily, I think the airlines could probably learn from our Hoosier hospitality.
What's the most difficult thing about this weekend, you know, in terms of selling or marketing or executing any part of the plans that you've got to bring people in?
I think for years that we've been known globally and solely on as a motorsports destination. And so I think that's part of the branding, that Indianapolis, yes, we have an incredible experience called the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. But obviously, saying that that brand is broader than that, that it's rich with arts and culture, it's rich with civic and architectural wonders, all of those fill out that experience. Certainly, you use that as a carrot to attract people, and we never want to run away from that, nor do we want to become complacent in just assuming it's always here.
So, Chris, is that tough to say to those folks who come in and they're really, really dedicated motorsports fan? You know, you really ought to go check out we've got a first-rate museum of art here, too, as well.
Yeah, you know, those motorsports enthusiasts are tried and true, and they spend the majority of the time at the track. We do see great success in upselling and side-selling them to shift gears, if you will, into the cultural part and the food part, in particular the food part. What's on our mind this weekend is also rain. Last year, boy, it was just beautiful. And this year you've got some potential for rain. So how does that impact the customer's experience, the visitor's experience? Is that corporate C-suite executive racing in from San Francisco who's thinking about bringing his or her company to do meetings here or open up shop or relocate? How does weather impact the overall vibe? We already have enough of our work cut out for us in the, quote, Midwest, the perception that brings. Good weather, great weather helps us tremendously. So we'll be monitoring that, and hopefully we get some sunshine on Sunday.
What does, if you have a rain out of the 500, what's the impact of that? We're getting close on time. Bob?
Well, you certainly obviously have the delay that could be experienced. You have people needing to extend their hotel stay if it moves into a Monday, or in some cases it's moved into a Tuesday experience. And so all of that causes the shuffling of your plans. And so in a hospitality-rich environment, that's something we have to pay attention to. You know, and to quote a great civic leader, Jim Morris, who has led us in so many ways, you know, Indianapolis has always had to compete above it in its weight class. We continually compete above our weight class and succeed time and time again. And so weather is not unique to motorsports in Indianapolis. It's not even unique to motorsports. And we rely on patience and the celebration of the experience.
That'll have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guest, Chris Gall. He's Senior Vice President of Visit Indy, and Bob Schultz, Vice President of Downtown Indy, for what's been a lively conversation. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, John.
I'd like to thank all of our listeners. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.